Do you want to do the intro?
Yeah, I'll do the intro.
First time in a while.
Yeah, we're going to do a normal one.
Oh, that's unfortunate. You haven't come up with some sort of pun or some sort of topical...
Oh, I dare not do a topical introduction. Oh, there's nothing good happening in the world. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Words About Books. This is a poorly spoken podcast, and I am Benjamin Edward here with my co-host Nathaniel Creed. And today we're talking about Sorcery by Terry Pratchett, a Discworld novel. How you doing, Nate?
How's it going, buddy? I'm doing great.
Is that your catchphrase now? How's it going, buddy?
Only if it sells t-shirts. Does anyone really want...
We could put your face on them.
Okay. maybe we can also branch out into like thongs or something.
That was a weird. that was a weird place to jump to.
No, man, that's exactly what you want to see when taking off a lady's pants.
Well, I was going to say when the girl's sitting in front of you in class whale tails, but. Anyway.
All right.
I think we'll open this up with a real quick about the author. I just want to ask you before I get started, Nate, this is your first Terry Pratchett book ever.
Yes.
Okay. And you don't know anything about him?
No.
Okay. Well, Sir Terry Pratchett.
Ooh.
Yeah. Don't you feel a fool?
I do. I don't think I'm ever going to be knighted.
I can guarantee you're never going to be knighted. You're not British.
I probably got some ancestry. Does that not count?
No, not at all.
You can't be like, I'm 1/64th British.
No. I don't think the Queen's gonna go for that. So Terry Pratchett is actually now the second British author in a row that we have covered on Words About Books, and this is also the second time I mentioned him on the podcast. If you happen to catch our Coronavirus Survival Guide episode, you may remember that I recommended a book called Good Omens, and that is a book he co-authored with his longtime friend Neil Gaiman.
And if you haven't listened to that episode, listen to that right after this episode.
Yeah. Despite everything I'm seeing around me, I don't know if the coronavirus actually disappeared.
No, we just kind of moved on.
Yeah.
It's not important anymore. It's whatever.
We're done with it. So, yeah. but yeah, prior to working as a writer, like so many authors we cover, Pratchett was a journalist. Shortly after the Three Mile Island accident, which has happened not very far from where I live. Shout out Pennsylvania.
I believe Pennsylvania is a hellhole, according to Marked.
It's funny. They still actually, in the area around where Three Mile Island is, they never brought those reactors back online that melted down. But there are still, there's at least one functioning reactor still, and they still distribute, like,
radiation and poison?
No, safety pamphlets for what to do if it melts down again.
That's good information.
Yeah, it's like, well, and it's good because if you buy a house in that area and you didn't know that, you will one day get a pamphlet that details that you're actually in the not good zone. After Three Mile Island, Terry Pratchett became the press officer for the Central Electricity Generation Board. He apparently learned many interesting things about the nuclear energy business. Pratchett remained keenly interested in science and was an amateur astronomer.
How are you an amateur astronomer? Do you just, like, buy a telescope?
Well, I imagine he had a pretty decent telescope and knew how to use it and knew all the constellations and planets and stars and galaxies. And like, I could buy a telescope and I'd be like, yep, that's a star.
And then you could call yourself an amateur astronomer.
And I would. So Pratchett is probably most famous for his Discworld novels, Sorcery is actually the fifth Discworld novel that he wrote, and the third to feature the bumbling, barely a wizard, Rincewind. The first Discworld novel was published in 1983, and Pratchett continued to write prolifically in that universe until 2011. His work was immensely popular, especially in his native Britain. BBC News listed the Discworld series as one of its 100 most influential novels, and in 2009, Pratchett was knighted for services to literature. Unfortunately, in 2007, Pratchett was diagnosed with a very rare form of early-onset Alzheimer's. I'll need to lean more on my medically inclined co-host to correct me if I'm wrong here. He suffered from posterior cortical atrophy. The symptoms of Pratchett's disease were less associated with episodic memory and more associated with working memory and visual impairment. This caused him to eventually lose the ability to read and write, though he was able to continue working on his books through dictation. Pratchett has donated heavily to Alzheimer's research and was featured in several BBC documentaries on the subject. Tragically, he did die on March 12th of 2015 at the age of 66. Numerous public figures paid tribute, including the British Prime Minister David Cameron, comedian Ricky Gervais, and authors Ursula Le Guin, Terry Brooks, Margaret Atwood, George R.R. Martin, and of course his good friend Neil Gaiman.
Was his final book just like a victory lap? Like, fuck you, I'm still writing?
He didn't talk about it that way. I forget what exactly he referred to it as. He never referred to it as his disease or his condition. He called it like the trouble or the problem or something. And he did finally have to cancel an appearance he always made at a Discworld convention, citing that the problem had finally caught up to him and he couldn't do it anymore. But he remained in incredibly high spirits. And that's actually going to be a recurring theme in his books. Several readers who had terminal illness or who had faced serious health issues would come to him and talk about how his portrayal of death in his books gave them a little bit of peace with it. It made them less afraid of the concept of death. And that is something we're going to talk about a little bit as we get into this book. But yeah, he has an excellent sense of humor, as I'm sure you've realized from reading the book.
So I looked at the little flowchart, and he actually has novels about death, like centered on death. Wow.
Oh yeah, yeah. Death has its own series. So why did I choose this book? And you'll have to forgive me if I go on a little bit of a tangent here. But as a fantasy fan, I was always vaguely aware of the Discworld novels. I was familiar with some of Pratchett's writing from Good Omens, which was recommended to me by a friend. It was actually recommended to me by Scott, who does our podcast artwork. And it quickly became one of my favorite books. I had been put off from reading the Discworld novels for a long time for two reasons. The first was the sheer number of books in the series. For most of my life, I was the type of reader who, having started a series, I needed to finish the series uninterrupted. And I wasn't prepared to make that commitment to Discworld. In fact, I don't think I could make that commitment to Discworld. I would just be reading Discworld novels for the next 10 years. So I am ashamed to say that I didn't read my first Discworld novel until 2015. But there was another reason I didn't want to check them out initially, and that was that I had heard about the sheer ridiculousness of them. Discworld is, of course, a flat world traveling through space on the back of a sea turtle, balanced on elephants. It's meant to be nonsensical, and I had just finished reading all of Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I was kind of a little burnt out on that style of humor. So I put it off and put it off, and I did not read my first novel until after Terry Pratchett died. And when he died and I saw the reaction to his death, people I never knew even were reading books would come out of the woodwork and say how much his books had meant to them and what a wonderful person he was. And so I finally had to take a look at his work, and I'm very glad I did. I read The Color of Magic, which many people don't consider to be one of the better books, but I liked it. It was a really nice change of pace from the grim, dark fantasy and horror novels that I'd spent the last few years engaging with. And I definitely understood why he meant so much to the people who loved his work. Now, you may wonder why we're starting with the fifth book in the series and not the first. And that brings me to that point about there's just so much Discworld. But the nice thing about Discworld is that you can kind of drop in anywhere you want. I hadn't read Sorcery before, and we do like to read books on the podcast that we can both have a fresh take on. And so I thought this would be a good place to start. There were several guides that recommended it as the starting point for the Rincewind character arc. I don't know if Rincewind has a proper arc. I have a feeling it's more of a sitcom formula where things go back to the way they were at the end.
Why start here? Because he does have two books before here.
So I actually went to the Discworld subreddit to look up a Discworld reading order or a recommended reading guide, and I found a chart. And I'll post this chart in the blog after this episode goes up. But it recommended that this was a good starting point for Rincewind. I'd heard that the first two novels, they were, I think, not the first two novels he had written. Color of Magic, I think, was his first novel.
Yeah, Color of Magic was first.
There were some books between that and the second Rincewind one, but I'd heard they were just kind of rehashing. And I've actually heard that this one is rehashing some of the plot points, and we'll talk about that as we get into the summary and what exactly this book is about. But yeah, it just seemed like it had a little bit more interesting plot than Color of Magic. I wanted to mainly avoid reading a book I'd already read after Dune. I didn't want to just recommend my favorite books on the podcast. I want to challenge myself to read more. Did it bother you as a new reader? Did you feel disoriented? I know there were a couple of things you didn't quite get.
Like the librarian? Yeah, I mean, I didn't find it disorienting because it seems self-contained enough. And they explained all the major stuff.
Yeah, the only thing you wouldn't get is the luggage is introduced in a previous book.
Yeah, but I got what it was about.
Yeah.
It was great.
So, yeah, I'll tell you what, let's just jump in to Discworld. So before we start talking about the book, this story itself, I want to go over exactly what Discworld is, both in reality and in concept. In reality, Discworld is a fictional fantasy universe in which most of Terry Pratchett's novels take place. There are several sub-series within Discworld, and one of these sub-series centers around the character Rincewind that we've mentioned. And this is the sub-series that we're going to focus on today. And like Nate said before, there's a sub-series on death. There's sub-series on the fates, I want to say, or witches. It's interesting. So in concept, Discworld is a magical land where sword and sorcery very much thrive. The series is very light and comedic in tone, and so many ridiculous things are just accepted as bland fact. For starters, the Discworld, as I described before, is a disc-shaped flat world traveling through space. How does it travel? Well, it rides on the back of a space sea turtle, Atuin. How does it stay balanced on Atuin's shell? Well, it rests comfortably on the backs of four elephants who stand on Atuin's shell. I believe the sun and the moon orbit the disc, though I'm not super clear on that. It's just kind of a ridiculous setup where literally anything can happen. And Nate, is there anything else you think the people need to know before we get started? Or are there any questions you have that I can try to answer about the nature of Discworld?
Yeah. How do you know that we don't live on a Discworld, Ben?
Oh, well, I'm not an idiot. I could tell you about all the various experiments you can do from the ground to prove that it's round, but I got to imagine if you're determined to believe it's flat, I'm not going to convince you.
Are you sure NASA didn't just Photoshop out the elephants and the turtle when they went to the moon?
Oh, NASA, you mean never a straight answer? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, our world isn't flat. Next next question.
Oh, that's all I had for you.
All right. Our book starts with, I had a hard time actually following the exact number of people in this family chain, but I think a wizard has 8 sons, and the 8th son has 8 sons, and that son has 8 sons. I think it's a wizard cubed. Is that what they call it?
That sounds right.
The point is, if wizards have kids, I guess the power of their magical abilities gets amplified with each passing generation.
But only in the sons.
Oh, yes. Yes. Only in the sons. So, the 8th son of an 8th son of an 8th son will be a sorcerer. And a sorcerer is a human fountain of magic.
Oh, I guess I do have a question for you.
Yes.
Is that how they spell sorcerer in the United Kingdom?
No.
Okay.
No. So this is actually, and this was a big annoyance to me as I was trying to write the script for this episode. Terry Pratchett has so many spelling puns. So as you may notice from the title of our episode, sorcerer is spelled like source code, not the traditional Merlin the Sorcerer. And that is a pun, of course, because a sorcerer is a source of magic. Did you get that, Nate?
I just thought he had a weird way of spelling it.
Are you serious?
I did.
Oh my god. This is going to be a long episode.
Yeah.
You don't under...
Well...
Okay, my co-host doesn't get puns. I'm going to guess you hated this book.
Not terrible puns, which is all of them, unless I'm the one saying it, and then it's funny. So
it sure is.
All right, back to the prologue. We're talking about the 8th son of the 8th son of the 8th son being a sorcerer.
The sorcerer's father has some grudge against all wizardry. I suppose they kicked him out for breaking the rules. The rules that all wizards must be celibate to avoid the creation of a sorcerer?
Or couldn't they just only have 7 kids, and then once you get to the 8th kid, you know, you wrap it?
I don't know if that's a thing in Discworld.
They have magic, but they can't just, like...
You know, it's a weird conundrum, Nate, where... male-dominated sorcery just can't come up with a way to create a condom. No, that's impossible. Yeah, we won't get into that. So, this guy's pissed that he got kicked out of the wizard tower, even though it sucks. Like, I don't know why he's pissed. He's pissed, okay?
I'd much rather get laid 8 times than live in that weird tower.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this dude lived the life. But I guess they do mention that all his sons hate him. He's just an egotistical prick.
Well, yeah, that's kind of on him, though.
Well, he's miserable because of himself, not because of anything the wizards did. He's just an asshole. Okay, so this asshole has a son who's a sorcerer.
His name is Ipslor.
Ipslor. And... lightning is striking all around this guy. He's in the midst of a terrible storm, and all of a sudden, death appears to him. Death's like, hey, your time's about up. Ipslor is like, I'm not going down before I get my revenge on those stupid wizards. And he's got this baby, the 8th son, and he's like, well, I'll use him to get my revenge. I will... prophesy a destiny for him. And Death's like, whoa, you want to be careful with that. You don't want to do that stuff. And he's like, I'm going to do it anyway. And he prophesizes that his son shall rule all the world, and all the wizards will bow to him. His son shall be named Coin, and will wear the ancient and powerful Archmage's hat, and there will be no greater magic than his. And Death says,
Nope, illegal prophecy, you can't do that. You gotta bake in a loophole. That's how prophecy works.
And Ipslor's like, well, when my son throws away his magical staff, then wizardry will have a chance. And apparently no wizard would ever throw away his staff. That's just not a thing that they do. And Death agrees that that is unlikely but possible. And he puts himself, like his own soul, into the staff so that Death can't collect it. And he then subtly influences Coin's destiny and thinking from then on out. Though Coin is an infant, so I'm not actually sure how he survived.
Yeah, I was unclear on that as well, but he's magic.
He's magic.
He's super magic, so maybe the staff killed everything and generated food. I don't know.
So how did you feel about the setup?
Yeah, it was understandable, but feel like maybe wizards should just, instead of banishing you, just execute you. That way there's not a crazy person with a grudge against the university and magical powers out there who can reproduce a whole bunch of times and create a sorcerer. It's not like they didn't know that that would happen.
I want to talk a little bit about Death as a character. I was so happy that this book started with Death. It won't probably surprise anyone who's listened to this podcast that my favorite character in all of Discworld is Death. I had a favorite quote in here, and it was Ipslor's asking Death about the future, and he's saying, you know, I don't regret having kids. I'd do it again. Children are our hope for the future. And Death responds that
there is no hope for the future.
Children are our hope for the future. A future full of vengeance and violence.
Death responds that the only thing the future contains is him. And Ipslor asks, besides you, I mean. Death gives him a puzzled look.
I'm sorry?
And that is Death's whole character in a nutshell. He just doesn't get people. and he knows that he's inevitable and that all things die. And his text, all Death's text, is one font size smaller than the rest of the text and all capital letters. And in fact, the inscription on Terry Pratchett's tombstone has a message from Death written on it in that font. I love that. I love that so much.
What does it say?
At last, Sir Terry, we must walk together.
Terry took Death's arm and followed him through the doors and on to the black desert under the endless night. The end.
Here I was hoping it would be something profound from Death.
No, that's the thing. Death, it's never. Like, you always expect Death to be profound or deep or scary or whatever, and he's always just very like,
hey guys, oh boy, I hope they don't make me play chess this time. I always forget how the horse moves.
I love Death. I love how, like, understated he is, how, like, socially awkward he is.
So, what does Death do? Because I see that you have a thing about that.
Oh, yeah. So the guy puts his soul in the staff. And so I suppose I will just read a portion from the book. That Death leaned on his scythe and sighed.
Foolish. How easy I could cut you loose.
Not without destroying the staff, said the voice of Ipslor, and it seemed to Death that there was a new, thick, exultant quality to it. And now that the child has accepted the staff, you cannot destroy it without destroying him. And that you cannot do that without upsetting destiny. My last magic. Rather neat, I feel. I guess my question about that as I was reading the book was, how can Coin cast aside the staff if it would kill him to destroy the staff.
Yeah, I didn't think that was the... I don't know. I thought it was more of like, well, death can't destroy the staff because then there'd be no way, there'd be no loophole out of that destiny. So he's got to let the staff be or everyone's fucked.
Well, I suppose that's true. But no, because Coin doesn't need, I don't know. So I think this is going to be a recurring theme of my analysis of the book is that don't really focus in on the mechanics of the world. Discworld,
the details. Yeah, don't.
Discworld is random. It is inherently random. And that is the joke. So I knew as soon as I read this, obviously I knew because there's like, I don't know how many more Rincewind novels, that the world does not end. And that Coin...
What?
Coin is probably not going to take over the world and kill everybody in it. The book then cuts to years later.
Now, hold on. Hold on. First of all, I had no idea who the main character was, so I assumed it was going to be Coin. Especially because it's called Sorcery, and he's the sorcerer.
I digress. That's a fair assumption.
What I needed to bring up, because you talked about how much you like death, I'm going to go on a short tangent. I called it the Needless Conspiracy Corner, because I don't know, I guess we're just adding corners all the time. We're just going to have like 1,000 corners.
It's an oddly shaped house that we've built, yes.
Yeah. So everyone... or at least a good majority of people that I have to be exposed to. There's the whole thing of like the Simpsons predicted so-and-so. Like, oh, they predicted 9/11. Oh, they predicted Trump as president.
Has anyone said the Simpsons predicted 9/11?
Yes.
Really?
There's an episode with the Twin Towers and they have all this bullshit. Yeah. People think that the Illuminati is talking to us through the Simpsons. I guess because the Illuminati are getting bored. Like, they're like, we've been a secret for too long. We gotta try and blow the secret through subliminal messages in The Simpsons. That'll get them.
Man, Flat Earth, Illuminati, 9/11 truthers. This book got way deeper than I thought it would.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Because the moment I knew I would like this book is when Death and Ipslor are talking. And Ipslor is like, what else is there? And Death says, cats are nice. So the question is, Ben, did Terry Pratchett predict YouTube cat culture?
I think there's a solid chance Terry Pratchett may have predicted YouTube cat culture. It seems like the sort of thing he would understand.
Oh, goddamn.
But so, yeah.
It's a very...
The book cuts to years later in... Ankh-Morpork.
Moving on.
What do you want me to say about cat culture? That's not even a good conspiracy.
An in-depth analysis, Ben.
Okay.
I want to see pictures of your cats on YouTube by the time this airs.
I think this is just saying more about you and your weird affection for cats. I barely even like my cat.
Yeah, I hate my cats when I'm trying to sleep. They won't shut the fuck up.
And you want to have children.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a terrible idea. But children are our future, according to Ipslor. And that guy seems to have his head screwed on straight.
According to Death, there is no future. And I'm looking around the world these days and I'm like, you know what? Death's making some solid points here.
By the time this episode airs, I'm sure that there will be no United States government. It's just going to be all-out civil war.
So at the time, okay, this is a little...
The oceans will probably be on fire somehow. I don't know.
This is a little meta, but at the time I'm recording this, I just a few days ago uploaded our Deep in the Crease episode. And I realized in that episode, and we recorded that episode in December of 2019, and I had a cold. And I realized as I put that episode out, everyone was going to think I had coronavirus.
Maybe you did.
Yeah, and then that's what I started thinking. I was like, December of 2019, did I have coronavirus? And now I won't even venture to speculate, because this is going to come out. No, this is going to come out in September. Oh boy, we're going to be well into like the third wave of ultra corona by then.
Yeah, I was going to say super coronavirus, but ultra is even better.
Remember those murder hornets?
Are they spreading coronavirus?
Yes, probably.
On 5G networks?
Oh god, don't even get me started.
Do they beam into your phone? Is that how they get you?
Did you see somebody was selling like 5G protection boxes or something?
Oh my god, that is a brilliant marketing strategy.
Somebody bought one and opened it like it was supposed to contain this machinery that counteracted the 5G signal, and it's empty. It's just empty. But you know what? 5G is actually excellent for the podcast host, because now people can download our episodes like that.
Yeah, and they only might get a little bit of corona with every episode.
All right. I'm going to have to edit a good chunk of that. So years later, in Ankh, Morpork. All right. So I'm going to handle this summary a little differently than we handle summaries in the past, because to be perfectly honest, the plot is very bare bones. We're going to cover the characters, how they're introduced, how they interact, things like that. But I don't know that there is a lot of point. You compared it to our Bruce Campbell read, and it's kind of like that, in that the story isn't really the point. The ride is the point. It's more a very long, very funny prose poetry than it is a coherent narrative. Would you agree with that, or do you?
Yeah, the story is a bunch of people going from place to place because they are told to, or they're dragged along for the ride. They don't really want to go there, but they do, and comedy and adventure ensues.
All right, so I'm going to just briefly introduce Rincewind, the librarian, and the luggage. So Rincewind is a wizard. But he's not a very good wizard. He's actually the worse wizard. In fact, if Rincewind were to die, the average magical ability of the human race would increase slightly.
Ouch.
Rincewind has two friends. One is an orangutan, and one is a suitcase.
I feel his pain.
I'm not that hairy, you son of a bitch. I had shoulder surgery. They had to shave me. Shut up. Anyway, so the orangutan is the librarian and Rincewind's boss. And the orangutan is only ever referred to as the librarian, so that is what we're going to call him from here on out. The librarian was once a wizard who was transformed into an orangutan, and he had then since refused all attempts to transform him back, because when he lost his humanity, he discovered a certain simplicity and enjoyment to life that he didn't want to give up. So he remains an orangutan librarian. Rincewind's second friend, who is more of a pet, is his luggage. And the luggage is introduced in another book, but really all you need to know about the luggage is that it is a suitcase, and it is kind of like a D&D bag of holding. It can store things, though it very rarely serves that function.
I believe it is a D&D bag of devouring, Ben.
All right, so the luggage is, it's sentient luggage. It's a suitcase. It does attack and devour people in the infinite void of its maw, and it binds to an owner. And right now, for reasons unknown, it has bound to Rincewind. The luggage is sentient because it is made from the wood of the sapient pear tree. We get a little background explaining that there was once in a time long past a magical war fought between wizards using the power of sorcery. There was so much magic in the world that wizards were able to channel just godly powers. And they fought and fought, and they destroyed most of the world. And there were strange random side effects as rogue magic flowed throughout. And one of these strange side effects was the sapient pear tree, a tree that was very angry to have been made sentient. It was just doing its thing peacefully, being a tree, and all of a sudden some wizard cast a spell and it had to be aware of stuff. It regenerates indefinitely, I think, and the luggage was constructed of it and is, I guess, a part of it. Terry Pratchett doesn't really go into the implications of that.
Yeah, shut up. That's your implication.
So Rincewind's hanging out in the library with his boss, the orangutan, and the books are scared. These are magical books, so they can be scared. And they're jittery and moving around, and Rincewind just notices a whole host of strange happenings all throughout the university. Stranger than normal, because is it a university or an academy?
It's a university. It's Unseen University.
Yes, the Unseen University. So magic, strange magics infuse the Unseen University, and Rincewind is noticing things are a bit stranger than usual. The rats, which wear clothes, are marching in an orderly fashion out of the campus. The roaches are leaving, and he notices a mattress jumps from a third-story window, lands on the ground, and then marches away on thousands of tiny little legs. Yeah, even the bedbugs are fleeing, so Rincewind's like, you know what? Something bad's happening. And he does manage to pull aside one of the mythical creatures that's fleeing the university and asks, what's going on? And they're like, sorcery's coming! There's a sorcerer coming! You gotta get out of here! And Rincewind's like, I don't know what any of that is, but I better get out of here.
Rincewind is, his best ability is survival. If there's danger, he knows to get the fuck away from it and just remain hidden for as long as possible and just wait for everything to kind of sort itself out.
Rincewind reminds me of you. For the benefit of the listeners, I'll explain what I mean. Not in that you're incompetent or anything like that. No, you don't have Rincewind's.
That's good.
Yeah, you don't have Rincewind's like just total lack of talent. But in terms of response to calls to adventure, and specifically like danger and combat, I can definitely imagine if you and I were to go on an actual adventure and there was a bar fight.
All you, buddy.
Yeah, I would turn around and you would be gone.
I wouldn't abandon you. I would just go to the other side of the room near an exit and just kind of point for you to take care of him.
I would treat your wounds after everybody left.
Exactly. You are a large, hairy man who has martial arts experience. You can deal with it, and afterwards I can wrap your broken bones and get you to a hospital. I can splint you, okay?
That's another one for my Nate soundboard. Oh dear. Yeah, so Rincewind quickly grabs his friends, the luggage, and the librarian, and they head for the pub to wait all this out.
So that just reminded me of Shaun of the Dead. Alright, so we grab Mom, we kill Phil, we go get my girlfriend, and then we go to the Winchester and have a pint and wait for it all to blow over.
I don't think there's any chance that Simon Pegg is unaware of Terry Pratchett. Yes. So they're leaving, and it's a good thing that they do, because the sorcerer is indeed coming, and he's coming for a reason. So tonight at the university, is the night where they crown the new archmage. So here's my quote. The Arch-Chancellor's chair was empty. Wazygoose was dining alone in his study, as befits a man chosen by the gods after their serious discussion with sensible senior wizards earlier in the day. Despite his 80 years, he was feeling a little bit nervous and had hardly touched his second chicken. And that made me laugh, because that was like a very clear shot at the Pope, who is chosen by God, but also with the council of like 100 bishops who vote on him or whatever.
Does the Pope also eat just a shitload of food?
I don't think this current one does, but...
When did this book come out? Hold on. That was 1987, I want to say? 88, okay. John Paul II. He doesn't look fat.
He doesn't look fat. That's the nicest thing I've ever heard you say about a pope.
The fattest pope was apparently Pope Innocent the VIII.
Oh, dear. So, yes, the wizards have elected a new arch-chancellor. And the thing you should know about wizards is they're very cutthroat when it comes to their bureaucracy. They have various ranks and level of wizard. And moving up in the ranks usually involves the assassination of somebody above you. Terry Pratchett actually describes it, the reason wizards do not rule the world is because if you give any two wizards a length of rope, they will instinctively pull in different directions. So you don't want to get too involved in wizard politics, but they are electing a new archmage, and Coin is coming into town to throw his hat in the ring for consideration.
Whatever happens to Wazygoose? Never appears after this. I assume he's dead.
I assume he's dead, yes. There's a very important hat that the Arch-Wizard wears, and it's a magical hat, and it bestows you with all kinds of powers. And the hat is also sentient. And the hat has ideas of its own about this incoming sorcery.
Yeah, the hat's also kind of an asshole.
So, at the same time the sorcerers... coming in, a lithe, sexy, dark figure slips over the wall and sneaks into the Arch-Chancellor's study and steals the box containing the hat and then makes off. And then, Nate, would you like to describe Coin coming in and talking to the wizards?
What about it? He comes in the door and they're like, "Who's this child?" And he's like, "Hey, show me some magic." And they're like, "Ha, all right, here's this tiny little, like, miniature world." And he's like, "Why is that so tiny?" He makes a giant world, and then he murders a dude. And they're like, "Oh, fuck, okay." And then he's like, "I'm tired." And he goes and takes a nap. Was there more to it? There was also a fifth level Belzer and an eighth level guy whose name begins with a C, Carding. And they have a little chat that involves shooting magic at each other that comes to a standstill, and they're like, "Hey, we could use this boy to our benefit. Cause you see how he just murdered that other dude? That guy was eighth level. That guy was fucking hardcore. Now he's dead. I don't want to be dead. So let's ally ourselves with this boy, and let's make him the Arch-Chancellor." "Oh yeah, we should go make sure that hat, that nothing's happened to that hat. I mean, I don't know why anything would happen to the hat. That would be weird. But like, let's go get it and make sure."
Well, and Coin is particularly concerned with the hat. He wants the hat.
Yeah, that was part of his destiny, and it never actually comes true.
Yeah, they kind of forgot about that.
Whoops.
I don't know that they forgot about it so much as...
it didn't matter.
Well, there's hints throughout that Coin is maybe not in total control here.
Hints throughout, like him saying, "I don't know what to do," at the end, and his father putting his soul inside of the staff and talking to him. These are some very subtle hints you might not have noticed when reading the book.
Fuck you. So So yeah, the staff whispers to him. The wizards kind of pick up on that, but they don't know too much. Meanwhile, Rincewind is just getting drunk down at the pub, waiting for things to blow over. When all of a sudden, an attractive thief comes in.
Ah, yeah. It's just like in my fantasies. Let's go, Ben. What happens next?
Well, now you made it weird. So the person who stole the hat comes in, and she says, "Are you?" You know, she asks him if he's a wizard, and confirms that he is a wizard. And she's like, "I'm looking for somebody who's."
And then what does she do? Oh, okay.
Rincewind doesn't want to go with her because Rincewind isn't creepy, Nate.
Oh, that's unfortunate. So Rincewind and I are definitely not alike.
Yes,
is what you're saying.
Definitely. Yeah, I've done a 180 on that. But yeah, so the thief reveals herself as Conina the Barbarian, daughter of Cohen the Barbarian.
I wonder if he's related to...
To a certain...
To Arnold Schwarzenegger.
To a certain OC I have.
Do not steal.
She reveals that she is Conina, and she stole this hat because the hat asked her to. And the hat itself speaks, disappointed that the only wizard she could find was Rincewind. Rincewind does initially try to refuse to go along with the adventure. He's done with adventures. He's had more than he ever wanted, which is to say he's had at least one. He's all about to refuse. And then, you know, she takes her hood off and that long white hair comes down and...
Uh-huh. Go on.
All of a sudden, Rincewind's like... And then...
So he is a creepy weirdo. He lied to me.
No, right? He's not a creepy weirdo. He's an innocent, naive young man. I don't actually know how old he is.
He's at university, and he just wants to get his rocks off.
So yeah, we should mention... We should mention wizards are... They have some particular rules about sex and women.
Which is to say, no and no.
Now, wizards can manipulate magic that exists within the world, but sorcerers are fonts of new magic. And so Coin is basically a god, I guess?
I mean, he does defeat the gods pretty easily.
Rincewind has to join up with Conina to save wizardry, I guess. But before they could talk about it much more, these guards burst in and they're looking for Conina. And I don't think they're looking for Conina in response to the theft of the hat. I think they're looking for her for other crimes.
Yeah, that's what I got.
She kicks their ass. The librarian helps. And then the luggage gets in on it and there's just a whole big brawl. And Rincewind is dragged by the hand like a small child up the stairs and out the roof. Conina tells him to turn around and he's like, "Well, why should I turn around?" And she's like, I'm taking my clothes off. And he's like, "Oh my God." And he turns around because he's not a creep, Nate.
Damn it. Maybe if Sarah Fine wrote this.
Oh God. So he closes his eyes and he's like, I'm not turning around. I'm not turning around. And she's like, it's okay. I put more on now. And he's like, "Oh, thank God." And he turns around and she's wearing a proper dress. And the two of them manage to escape through the city and get back to her hideout. But her hideout, she chose like the wretchedest hive of scum and villainy to hang out. And so they go there and they immediately get into another fight. And the box gets lost. Because somebody threatens Rincewind and he's like, okay. Conina cleans up the attackers and they head out again and they find the guy who stole the box and he's just standing all creepy horror movie like under a light and he's dead. He's fucking dead. The hat killed him.
I was like, you're keeping me in suspense for something that he's dead. he's a solid frozen statue. Dead as shit.
I'm curious, Nate. So what are your thoughts now at this point in the book?
At this point in the book, I thought, okay, this is a story of a bunch of bumbling heroes who have to transport an item to do a thing. And that's the story. And that was, in fact, not the story. It went a different direction than what I thought it would.
Where were you with the tone of the book at this point? Did you... I mean, I assume you obviously picked up on the fact that it was a ridiculous...
Well, it starts out with Death telling a guy that cats are nice, so I knew it wasn't going to be some sort of deep, psychological, serious, dark fantasy world.
Now, the thing I was most curious about is we were starting this book, and it's about this point I realized that, like, the gags, like, Rincewind's awkwardness around women, just the... We can't really... convey in a podcast about the book without just reading the book to you the humor and the wit of the prose. But was it working for you? Were the jokes landing?
Some of them were landing, and the ones that weren't didn't turn me off, so I was able to stick with it.
Well, that was sort of the other thing, is it's kind of like a Mel Brooks production a little bit, in that it's just the jokes never stop. So if one doesn't land...
Yeah, Mel Brooks is great.
Yeah.
For the most part.
But like, if a joke doesn't land, you don't even have time to really groan before the next one's on you. So we've covered the introduction of Konina. Basically, just really quickly, the Hat decides that they gotta get out of the city, they gotta go to this this other place called Klatch, and they board a ship to go to Klatch.
Do they ever go to Klatch?
Yeah, Klatch is the town they wind up in.
Is that Klatch?
Yeah.
Okay, alright. Thought they just kind of stopped early.
The story is kind of structured like a D&D campaign, in that, like, I could almost split it up into sessions. The first session...
They get the hat, and they get the mission.
Yeah, she gets out of the university. The
next session is they're on a boat, and pirates attack. That's what's happening next.
It's funny, because... You mentioned at least once when we were talking before the podcast that there's no chapters in this book.
Yeah. At first I was like, okay, I'm just going to read this chapter and I'm going to put it down for a little bit. And then a new chapter just never came.
It's just 300 straight pages, and it changes perspective and location. It's sort of the way we format it in our short stories, of just like the double space. It's kind of a nonstop ride like that. So it was a challenge for me when structuring the episode to sort of be like, okay, when do I stop talking?
Never. You just keep talking.
So that's our first action piece in Ankh Morpork. From there, they board a ship. And as they're boarding the ship, we get a little bit of backstory about Konina. Konina is a barbarian by nature, but not by choice. She would like to be a hairdresser. She would also like to find a nice guy to settle down with, because she's also not creepy. Nate?
She should be.
That's the book I want to read.
Goddamn right!
We're going to read Marked number two? I forget what it's called.
Who the fuck knows what it's called? There's two more after that, though, right?
There's one, well, one of them's called Fade. Anyway. I'm not, you're not tricking me into talking about that. So, she wants to be a hairdresser. She wants to find a nice guy to settle down with, but it's challenging because of her barbarian nature. She just can't help but kick ass. It just comes over her. Whenever she sees violence and swords, she's just gotta join in and beat the shit out of everybody around her. She's actually giving Rincewind a haircut. A really good haircut. She's actually a pretty decent hairdresser. As Rincewind and the luggage and now Konina are on this ship, Konina spots, before anybody else does, that there are pirate ships sailing towards her. She comments that, you know, there's these ships approaching, and that they seem to settle on the idea that they are slave ships from Klatch.
Well, there you go. Problem solved.
Rincewind's like, don't worry. Like, this is a pretty big ship. I don't think a pirate will try to attack that. And she's like, no, a pirate might not, but there's at least 5 pirates sailing towards us. And so they start to worry a little bit.
No. Rincewind has got this, okay? Just make some green flames, buddy. Scare them off with those green flames that you wizards can do.
The captain of the ship is like, yeah, we've got a wizard on board. They don't know what they're in for. Get him, Rincewind.
he's got to stretch first and, you know, do warm up. He needs to get a good breakfast.
He's looking at Konina and she's like, "Nah, I left my swords behind."
I wondered why did she do that?
Yeah, because before she's like strapped to the
teeth. Got like a bunch of throwing daggers and swords and she's just kicking ass. Now she's got a comb and some clippers, both of which are still lethal weapons in her hands. And later on, she gets rid of those too for some reason. She just has a habit of not bringing any weapons with her.
Well, she doesn't want to be a barbarian.
Well, sucks to be you.
They are eventually boarded by pirates, and Rincewind is running around, like, trying not to get stabbed, and Konina does take a sword off a guy and start cutting her way through all the pirates. But in the midst of it all, Rincewind is...
Yeah, he gets a minor cut, sees his own blood, and that's it. That's the show. Yeah.
And of course during the battle he loses the box again.
Yeah, that happens a lot. You know, the pirates, they stole the box from Rincewind, but they didn't think to steal Rincewind. They're like, this guy's not gonna be a good slave. The people that they chartered the ship from, their plan was to just sell Konina and then offer Rincewind as an incentive. Like, hey, yeah, we'll throw in this guy for free if you buy her.
Yep. Yeah, because Rincewind, he doesn't know magic, and he's not, like, physically capable either. He's just all around, like, the worst.
I guess when they saw Konina slaughter people with a comb and some clippers, they're like, yeah, that's not going to go over so well.
So the hat gets stolen again. And fortunately, in return for Konina's act of bravery in rescuing the ship from the pirates, the people they're traveling with agree to take them the rest of the way to Klatch, to which Rincewind says, wasn't that what we paid them for in the first place? And she's like, well, it turns out they were actually just going to take us there and then sell us. But since we saved their lives, they're going to be cool and actually do what they said they were going to do.
And also, if they don't, we will fucking slaughter them. Like,
yeah, I think that there was an implication.
I think that was the big thing.
I'm going to say that ends, like, session two of the campaign.
Right.
So they've lost the hat again, and they need to find it. I'm not entirely sure why Konina's so into the hat.
Told her to do it.
Yeah, it's not really explained. I guess she just likes the adventure of it. But all throughout, Rincewind's kind of... it's kind of falling for her a little bit. He's thinking that maybe he might... the whole time you're kind of thinking, like, is Rincewind going to betray his wizard vows?
I thought they were going to end up together until the next part of the campaign.
I thought they were going to end up together, but at the same time, I was aware of the Discworld novels. I think a lot of people have a criticism of the first couple that they are sort of repeats of each other. They hit the same kind of beats. But I don't think that's the right way to look at it, because it's like a...
Was Terry Pratchett like, well, I'll show you, and then he released another 50 novels? Like, take that.
I think initially Terry Pratchett was a little bit insecure about his writing. I think Rincewind is an author self-insert.
Yeah, Terry Pratchett should be he should be less insecure and more assertive, like us. Also, the luggage has like a psychic link to its master, Rincewind, so it starts to fall for Konina as well.
Yeah, that was a subplot I wasn't even going to bother going into.
That's the whole plot. There you go.
Yeah, the luggage falls in love with Konina, but is rejected because it is luggage.
Yeah, poor luggage.
Yeah,
he was probably my favorite character. I don't mean that as an insult to any of the other characters. I do like that everyone describes the luggage as it has no face, but it somehow looks like it's menacing. Like, don't fuck with this thing.
Yeah, people could tell it's looking at them, even though it doesn't have eyes.
They could tell it's looking at them and that it's pissed off.
But what I was gonna say is, people get frustrated sometimes that this is not going anywhere, that Rincewind's not developing a lot as a character, but it's structured and written very much like a sitcom. The story is a vehicle for the prose.
So is this season three of Rincewind, the sitcom?
It kind of is, but like a sitcom, everything has to go back to the way it was at the beginning.
Yeah, that's why sitcoms eventually start to suck.
They do, and I haven't... Now, seeing that there are so many Discworld novels, I don't know that I can guarantee they're all going to be gems and that the conceit is never going to get old, but it hasn't gotten old for me yet, and I don't know how much he varies it up with other novels. But it would be strange if Rincewind suddenly started to get more competent. He loses the whole point of the character. It wouldn't be a Rincewind novel if Rincewind was a capable wizard.
Hey, he shows some capability, just not magic. That was his character moment. We'll get to that here in just a bit.
Okay.
So let's continue with Clatch. So the hat was probably brought here by those slavers. So the way we get in contact with them is we need to get in contact with the criminal element. So let's go walk down a shady alleyway and hope for the best. And they do that. And they're assaulted. And Konina is like, we just need to be captured by them. No big deal. But she couldn't be captured without a fight because of her genetics. So she just starts kicking ass. Until finally, it's pointed out that there's a bunch of dudes on the rooftop with bows and arrows, so she hasn't learned the barbarian leap ability yet.
Yeah, she can't matrix her way out of this one.
Yeah, so they are in fact captured. They're brought to the leader of the city and also his scheming vizier, Grand Vizier, as all of them are scheming.
Yeah, I don't know that I quite... understood. He's like, oh, this guy looks like a vizier. Every vizier is scheming. And I was like,
was this before Aladdin, Disney?
I mean, yeah, 1988 was definitely before.
Oh my god.
I guess maybe there is a wide swath of vizier fiction.
Oh my god. Yeah, 1992 was when Aladdin came out. So yeah, let's talk about the scheming vizier. He wants to interrogate them about the hat. And Rincewind drops the ball. He's like, yeah, it's the Archmage's hat. It's really magical and powerful. And so the hat's like, hey, fuck this guy. This wizard, he's an idiot. Let's you and I talk about something. You seem like the kind of guy who likes to scheme for power. Well, buddy, I've got it right here. So let's talk. And so the vizier is like, all right, take this girl away to the harem. And she's like, oh, sweet. I've always wanted to figure out what a harem was about. And there was a thing about her throat being sore. And I don't know if that was like intentional, but it turns out the harem is just her telling stories.
Oh, so there's, yeah.
A really shitty poet happens to be the leader of the town, and he loves yeah, like stories.
The Sultan, whose name is Creosote or Creosot.
That's a thing, isn't it?
I have no clue.
Okay, yeah, it was a chemical. It was a chemical characteristic of smoked meats. Okay, I'm like, I know I've heard that before. That's a thing, but I couldn't remember where.
Okay,
so there you go.
Yeah, so Creosote. Is,
and it's shit you can find in your chimney. Oh, yeah! Okay. Yeah, so my grandfather, the genius that he was, he had a wood-burning chimney, and it fills up with creosote, and you're supposed to, you know, sweep that shit out of there. And he didn't. And so he lit
a fire. His house burned down?
And yes, it burned all the creosote, and it shot flames out of the chimney onto a bunch of flammable material, a.k.a. his house. And it burned his house to the fucking ground.
Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry.
yeah, he had it. He had it coming. He shouldn't have been so stupid.
Wow, you are harsh.
I am much less harsh on him than his own children. Anyway, let's go back to Creosote.
Yeah. Oh boy, I really hope I'm saying that right, because it's gonna be a long book.
That's okay. We're not going to be able to pronounce most of this other shit anyway. So. Yeah, Creosote is how you say it.
Yeah, so Creosote is he's the Sultan, and it is his harem, and he fancies himself something of a poet, but he's not very good at it. And he has all of the harem girls tell him stories because he's obsessed with literature and stories. There's no sex. There's no none of that. He's just a very bland guy who I forget how he refers to it, but he laments his wealth. Perhaps if he was a less wealthy person, he'd be able to get out of this town.
Hashtag first world problems. Fuck you.
She says something like, well, you could give it all away. And he's like, no, no, I'll just have to do a little with a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
So Kunina gets taken to the harem, but Rincewind gets taken to, like, the dungeon.
Well, first they're like, all right, we're going to throw him into the Tower of Eternal Flame. And they're like, oh, shit, the flame's out. Okay, we're going to feed him to the spider pit. And it's like, no, no, the spiders are all gone. They're like, all right, snake pit, I guess. Like, they go through several different ways of torture and murder, and they finally settle on snake pit, and there's only one snake down there.
Oh, yeah, and he thinks the snake's talking to him.
I thought that, too, and then Nigel stands up.
Yeah, the snake's looking at him in the dungeon, and he starts hearing a voice, and he's like, but you're a snake. And then the voice goes, well, that's a really mean thing to say to somebody. And then Nigel stands up, and it was actually a guy sitting behind the snake was talking to him, and Rincewind's just an idiot.
The Futurama joke. Oh god, is she right behind me? No, I'm right in front of you. Ah!
But yeah, so Rincewind is actually speaking with none other than Nigel,
the barbarian.
Who is an obscenely skinny man with, I imagine him with glasses. I don't know if he had glasses.
I don't think he did, but I also imagined him with glasses. And also, because he shared a name, he had some of the characteristics of Nigel Thornberry.
I thought the exact same thing. I'm just picturing. I didn't picture Tim Curry's voice. I did picture the giant nose and, like, the ginger hair.
I'm sorry, that was Tim Curry? Oh my god, I didn't ever put that together.
What the fuck is wrong with you? That's like the whole reason people like him. Anyway, I'm just blowing your mind today with these Nicktoons facts on our book podcast. So Nigel is absurdly skinny. He's a nerd. He's just the classic definition of a nerd. But he's read a book on how to be a barbarian, and he knows that his destiny is to be a barbarian. And he got caught trying to break into the palace to steal treasure or some such stuff, but he couldn't make it. And it's about that time that sorcery is starting to take over Ankh-Morpork.
So Coin takes over. They toadify some dudes. They take over the entire town next. Coin is given the Archmage's hat, which is a replica made by Speltzer. And Speltzer then dies after he discovers that the staff is, like, evil. What more do you want me to say about that?
Well, so basically, Coin starts building a mage tower.
A gigantic tower, because that's what all wizards do.
Yeah, right. All wizards instinctively build towers. And in fact, at some point, Rincewind, in his sleep, starts making an effort to build a tower. Like, he's in a trance, but he doesn't have any magic, so he's just stacking rocks and driftwood in a circle. So they build a tower, and they start invading the world. And while Rincewind's in the dungeon, they break into Klatch, and Klatch is flooded with so much magic from the sorcerer that even Rincewind can use it.
Oh my god.
And Rincewind busts them out of the tunnel.
He busts them out, and then he builds a staircase.
He breaks in, and the palace is in absolute chaos. And they have to save Conina because she's still trapped in the harem or whatever. Through a series of wacky circumstances, they do find Conina, and the creosote, I believe?
Yes, they find him. And then they're like, we have to get out of here. And Creosote's like, well, we've got a magic carpet hidden in the vault. So they go to the vault and it's empty. So now Creosote is poor. And they go to a secret vault inside the vault and they find the magic carpet and they insult Rincewind's pride. So he doesn't help them use it at first. And she's like, why won't it go up? I keep telling it to go up. And then Rincewind is like, descend, and it goes up. He's like, yeah, you put the carpet upside down.
Oh god. And the whole time Rincewind's also salty because Quinina has started making eyes at Nigel.
Yeah, that's true.
She's very impressed with this young barbarian
who is learning all of his stuff from a book. I want to go to the luggage real quick because I love the luggage. It was dejected because it is luggage. It was rejected by Quinina. So it goes to the bar and it gets fucking wasted on enough alcohol to poison a small nation. And then it wakes up in the desert because it didn't know how it got there. And it's just a series of weird, endangered mythological species trying to kill the luggage, and the luggage just keeps eating them and extinguishing their species.
And my favorite part is how the luggage like walks into a bar. The luggage sprouts legs. That's how it walks. And not
large legs, a bunch of really tiny legs.
Yeah, and so it walks into the bar, and it can't talk, and it can't gesture. But people just know what it wants. Like, it sits down at the bar and, like, people start, like, all these tough guys start averting their gaze. The bartender, like, sets a small, like, saucer like you would for a cat of liquor in front of the luggage.
Oh, I love the luggage.
The luggage is one of the better characters.
And the luggage just wants to go back to his master now. But he doesn't know where the hell he is because he's on a magic carpet flying away. And so the luggage, he plays a part towards the end. What other beats do we want to touch upon?
Well, you know, I think this is one where we don't really need to go through the full summary. Now that we've got all the characters introduced, we've got the Creosote. I call him the Creosote. I think that's his name.
I think that's his name.
Yeah, so Creosote, Nigel, Quinina, and Rincewind, and the luggage, and the librarian are the main characters. I guess we could touch on the librarian holding the fort down.
Yeah, he beats the shit out of a bunch of wizards who try to burn the library down.
Yeah, so the sorcerer is trying, he orders them to burn the library down. And I guess the one thing I would want to touch on is that Coin, as all this goes on, as the invasion of the world and the domination of sorcery starts to take root and people start to suffer, Coin does start to show a reluctance to go forward with it. And he seems to be bullied and abused by the staff.
It's almost like the staff has the soul of a jackass who ruined seven other sons who all hate him now.
We become increasingly aware that Coin is not evil. And perhaps if Coin were not being manipulated by the staff, he would be a perfectly good guy.
Yeah, I realized Coin wasn't evil when they said he was like 8 years old or 12 years old. I'm like, okay.
I wasn't sure if he would be corrupted or not. I wasn't really sure where they were going with that. And I guess we could skip ahead a little bit. And
well, don't leave out the fact that Coin's biggest competition, the Archmage's hat, is now on the Vizier's head. And he beats the shit out of a bunch of invading wizards and either kills them or subjugates them. And then it, too, builds a large tower to start the mage wars off.
After they escape the palace, wizards all over the world are building towers and launching remote strikes on one another. They're basically just summoning vast beams of destructive magic. And
What was their plan, though? So if they defeat Coin somehow, that's it. No more new magic. He's the source of the magic. It's like, okay, I rule the world, but now I don't have any magic, and everyone who I've hurt is now pissed off at me.
Yeah, so this is kind of what I was getting at when I said the story is like a D&D campaign or some other kind of medium where the story is not the point. Like, the comedy is the point. The sitcom antics of the party is the point of this story. Because if you're looking for a big lore dump or definition of how this magic system works, you're not going to get it. What are coins' powers?
Are you trying to tell me that this isn't a hard magic system, Ben?
This is not high fantasy. This is not even fantasy. This is comedy. Like, this is fantasy in the sense that Austin Powers is a spy movie.
It is a great spy movie.
It's a terrible spy movie. It's a wonderful comedy.
Dude, he's trying to waterboard a guy in a toilet to figure out who number two works for, and then he accidentally kills him, I guess.
But the whole point is, like, if you're looking for a good definition of what are the limits, like, for example, what are the limits of coins' powers? At a certain point, coins just, like the wizards mentioned that, well, the gods don't like it when people do this kind of magic, and coins just like, gods, waves a hand, gods are gone. Coin is all powerful. So you could ask yourself the question, why is any of this happening at all? And the answer is, I guess, in book, because Coin is a child. Because
Terry Pratchett said so.
So, yeah, why is there a mage war? Why doesn't Coin just wave his hand and take care of every hostile mage?
Shut up, that's why.
What is Rincewind going to do in that story? That's why, like, I don't know that there's a lot of point going through the rest of the summary, because there's not.
Yeah, there is a point, okay? Rincewind is scorned by his party, so he goes off on his own. And his plan is to hit Coin upside the head with a half brick inside of a sock.
Oh my god, yes. Yes, okay, we do need to talk about that. That had me actually in tears laughing.
Not even a full brick, mind you. It's half of a brick.
I'm laughing again. So, the party does quickly realize that Rincewind is A, incompetent, B, a wizard. And wizards are the ones causing all this problem for us normal folk. You know what? Answer for that, Rincewind. What's wrong with you people? He has this big speech about how he can't just stop being a wizard. That's like asking him to stop breathing. Being a wizard isn't what he does, thank God, because he's terrible at it. It's what he is. He is a wizard in the core of his being. It's all he's ever wanted to be. He's known since he was a child that he was a wizard. And he can't just stop. And so after they're all mean to him, he steals the magic carpet and leaves while they're asleep. And he decides he's going to have to try to do something about the state of the world. And he goes back and he has a chat with the librarian. And the librarian kind of convinces him that, you know, you're the only good wizard left. And I know you're not the most powerful wizard, but goddammit, Rincewind, you got to do something. So Rincewind, he doesn't know magic. And he doesn't really know how to fight. But maybe if he puts this brick in this sock to make a crude prison weapon and flies up behind the sorcerer on his magic carpet, he can beam him real quick. And that is Rincewind's plan. That is how Rincewind is going to save the day.
Hey, the luggage helps out too, because the luggage distracts the archmage's hat, because the luggage was trying to eat him.
Yeah, and but Rincewind, obviously, when he gets up to the top of the tower with his weapon in hand, He has to hesitate, because he realizes that the person he is about to bludgeon to death is an 8-year-old boy. And he's like, I've heard everything there is to know about this person except the fact that he's an 8-year-old boy. What the fuck is wrong with you people? And the staff orders Coin to kill Rincewind. And Coin looks at Rincewind, and he's like,
"Why?
He's got a brick. He's got a brick in a sock. I'm a living."
And Rincewind corrects, "Half a brick."
Yeah. Coin's like, "He's got a brick in a sock. I'm a living god."
He's actually asking him, like, "What's a half brick?" He's like, "Well, if you put two of them together, you've got a whole brick, I guess." It's like, Jeez. Okay.
And so Coin's just like, I can't kill this guy. He's pathetic. He's a puppy. Like, this is what's the point? He's no threat to me. He can't.
I just imprisoned the god.
Yeah,
okay?
like what?
What's guy with a fucking sock with a brick in it gonna do to me?
Yeah, even Coin is like attacking Rincewind. Rincewind is like, I can't attack this guy. He's an 8-year-old boy. And this 8-year-old boy is like, I can't attack this guy. He's an idiot. Like, he, look at this pathetic man who came up here to stop me with a brick in his sock. This is just too cruel, Dad. And he's like, no, you've got to kill him. And Coin's like, I won't do it. And he's like, well, if you won't do it, I'll do it. And the staff flies and Rincewind, he hits that
hero.
He hits the hero
that we need.
He hits that staff with the brick. And the brick blows up. And Rincewind's in real deep shit now. But Coin does eventually decide he's done with this.
Death also shows up around this time. He's just like,
hello. Don't mind me.
Death and the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which I'm not getting into because that's a whole other thing.
Let's just mention then that the other three horsemen had their horses stolen by Creosote, Nigel, and Konina. So they just hang out at a bar and they just drink the apocalypse away.
So there's an interesting thing I wanted to mention that you haven't read Good Omens, have you?
No, I haven't.
That may be one we have to do for the podcast, but definitely I'm going to recommend it again to read just for fun for you and for the audience. The Four Horsemen also appear in Good Omens. And Death appears in Good Omens, and it's the same character. Except for Pestilence has retired.
What?
Pestilence retired, and they hired Pollution in his place.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the only change, but it's the same characters. And that's why I say, like, he's kind of hinting that Discworld is a parallel universe. But all the mystical entities, death, and all the like forces of nature that guide our lives are present in all universes. I'm probably reading way too much into that, but it's a nice idea, I thought. And so Coin does eventually decide, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not your slave. I'm not going to be the vehicle for your revenge. He discards his staff, and the prophecy is loopholed.
And death takes that soul, goddammit.
Yep, and he is probably not going to have a good time. Actually, they never talk about an afterlife in Terry Pratchett's stuff. I don't know if that guy's going anywhere, but he has a soul, so I don't know. Don't think about it.
He puts it all in a little trunk.
Jesus Christ, don't... Don't even talk to me about that. Don't even talk to me about that twist.
So Rincewind and Coin are both transported to like an underworld.
Oh yeah, where like the Lovecraftian old gods exist.
Yeah, they want to get into our world and eat all of our magic, but in their world they're kind of like not the greatest. And so Rincewind is like, all right, we got to get you out of here because you can fix everything. Because, and we didn't mention this, but when he trapped the gods, the ice giants came out to start the apocalypse. And anyway, so Rincewind takes his other sock, fills it with sand.
<He's>... Like, did Rincewind do time? Is he going to make a shiv next? He's like locking and socking.
So yeah, Coin manages to escape because Rincewind threatens him as if he were his father. And Rincewind does not escape. Coin gets out and he seals the hole, but not before the luggage jumps into the underworld.
Yep.
what a great creature. I wish I had a luggage.
So I think I should also mention, I can't remember, but I feel like in one of the two previous Rincewind books, he falls off the edge of the disc. And then the next book just starts with him back at the Unseen Academy. Like, they never discuss how he got back. And got to imagine that same thing is going to happen in the next Rincewind book. He's just going to make some, like, haunted references to the trauma of being trapped in the Elder World. And never talk about how he got out. But yeah, the book ends. Rincewind doesn't get out. He is a hero. And Nigel and Konina go about their business, and Creosote sets off on his journey of self-discovery.
He falls in love with a woman who looks like an unbaked loaf of bread, who tells stories. Got a happy ending except Rincewind.
Well, and Coin, who just disappears into his own dimension to live alone for the rest of eternity.
You know, I bet he could make his own life. He's basically a god. Goes into his own dimension, he could probably make other people.
When they do hint that that is the fate of all sorcerers, they do eventually abandon this world to create their own. And so, yeah.
Oh my god, Coin is god. We figured it out. Terry Pratchett and the Illuminati, they're talking to us.
I don't know why you're so, like, you're not even good at conspiracies. Like, you don't even know the conspiracies.
I feel like my life is better for not knowing the conspiracies, Ben.
I guess I briefly wanted to talk about the theme of the book, because I did think that when I compare this to Good Omens, Good Omens had a really great blending of humor and heart. And that book was co-authored with Neil Gaiman, and it was also written, I think, well after this book. But this sorcery attempts to blend the humor and heart, and it tries to shoehorn the heart in at the end, where Rincewind doesn't want to hurt a child and the child doesn't want to hurt Rincewind, and people decide to live peacefully. But it doesn't quite land. It's all done a little too quickly. The story not taking itself seriously at all. It just didn't strike the right balance. Would you agree, or did you even think about it?
No, I think I agree with that. It's a lot of comedy, and I feel like with just a little more, I would actually care that Rincewind didn't come out of the dungeon dimensions.
Yeah, I just, I would have liked them to do a little bit more with that, but it was funny. I mean, I enjoyed the book. I guess if there was a theme, the reason I think it bothers me is because there was a little bit of development in that direction, with each character wanting to be something that they weren't good at. Like, Nigel wants to be a barbarian, Rincewind wants to be a wizard, Konina wants to be a hairdresser, Creosote wants to be a poet or a writer, and each of them struggles with that task and continues to do it in spite of everyone basically telling them, wouldn't it just be easier to not? And I think the thesis statement of that is when Rincewind says, being a wizard isn't what I do, it's what I am. And I just can't stop being a wizard.
Yeah, I'm a gamer, not because I have no life, but because I choose to have many lives.
Well, I think it was more Terry Pratchett might have been talking about being a writer, even though he didn't have a lot of self-confidence. Being a writer is what he is. He just can't help it.
At that point, he had two more books than we had. No, wait, four more books than we had.
Oh, right. But it took him a while to get there. It took him a long while to get there in terms of his career. He didn't just start writing at age 19 and get published. He worked in journalism for quite a while, And he probably did.
Do you want to become a journalist, Ben?
No. not at all. I don't know. I thought that was a nice theme, but it didn't get developed quite as much as I would have liked. It doesn't hurt the book too much. It's still funny. It's still a nice light adventure, but it could have really elevated it if he'd nailed that.
Yeah, I think so.
Since this is one of his earlier books, even though it's like his fifth book, I suspect that is something that he develops further as time goes on. So, Nate, is there anything else you would like to discuss about sorcery?
I don't think so. Other than if I remember, and my wife lets me, the next dog I get is going to be named Luggage. It's happening. So, tell everyone what we're going to be doing next month, the month of October.
So, next month, I have commandeered the podcast. We are going to be doing an entire month on H.P. Lovecraft. We're going to break our usual schedule of every other week, and we are going to release one podcast a week for each week in October. The first podcast will be a brief description of H.P. Lovecraft's life, influences, sort of why he was the way he was. If you're not aware, he's a little bit of a complicated author.
Called him Hates Progress Lovecraft.
I think I stole that from Overly Sarcastic Productions YouTube. Yeah, we're going to be talking about that. Then we're going to cover two of his novellas, At the Mountains of Madness and The Shadow Over Innsmouth. In addition to that, we're going to cover two of his short stories, Cool Air and Pickman's Model. So if you want to keep up with us, please check those out. I think most, if not all of those, are available for free online. I would check out Project Gutenberg first. And in addition to that, please follow us on Twitter at WABpod. Please check out our new Goodreads group. It is pretty easy to find. Just go to Goodreads, go to groups, search for Words About Books podcast, and you'll find us. It's a great way to keep up with what we're going to be reading and what we've already read if you want to go back through. And please also check out our own writing at poorlywritten.ninja. And for additional show notes and commentary, check out blog.wordsaboutbooks.ninja. Thank you, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Later. Oh, is that one of those experiments about LSD?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could be the name of our next drink, Ben.
I don't drink.
It doesn't have to be an alcoholic drink.
Well, then what the fuck? What is it, a milkshake?
Sure. With like okay. A shitload of caffeine in it.
I don't know what we're doing right now.
it's our energy drink, MK Ultra. I'd buy that.
What podcast is this?
We're pivoting. We're going away from books. And we're going into energy drink reviews.
We're going away from podcasting. Check out our new coffee shop at poorlybrewed.ninja.